You're with Sean Jung and Where the Veil Grows Thin, an exploration of the sacred moments of our human experience in life and death, joy and sorrow, birth and end of life. It's the unscripted instant when the heart opens, the face-to-face moments with the divine.
Hi, and welcome back. One of the things I learned working with people at end of life was that when we don't meet someone until they are in their process of leaving, we don't know them any other way. But we know that they were once some other way. They were once well and whole, robust and vibrant, funny and skilled at things, playful. They were living their life fully and with purpose. Often in end-of-life work, we don't meet people until they are well on their way out. When this is the case, we have to look to family members and others who are part of the person's tribe, so to speak, in order to get a sense of who they were in their more fully alive years. But today, I asked myself why. Why have I felt that need to know about what someone was like or what they did before I come into their life? That seems so counterintuitive to what I have always said about meeting someone where they are, and that the ability to do that, to meet someone right where they are, is such an important skill to embody in this end-of-life work. Sometimes small talk about the past can be a way of showing genuine interest in someone. It can lay groundwork for deeper discussions about what is important in that person's life. But today, I want to introduce you to someone whose end of life was only 31 days after her beginning of life. A beautiful, perfectly formed, truly angelic child. Something happened during her birth, and I do not remember now what it was exactly, but we knew she would not survive, so there was no small talk. It was serious business from the moment we arrived at the home where we'd been told to go. The first couple of weeks, she had been at a big hospital where specialists practice the art of caring for children with all sorts of life-threatening and life-limiting conditions. But now she was home, or at least close to home. The home her mom had awoken in 2 weeks earlier, when her water broke and her labor began. The mom was young, in her early 20s, I believe, and this was her first child. She had come home to her grandmother's house because her grandmother was her rock, and she was going to need a rock. When I arrived, the nurse who had just admitted the family to hospice was just leaving. She thanked me for coming and said she thought they could really use me. She had been shaken by being there. Something I had not seen before in this nurse, so I knew whatever I was walking into was big. The front door entered into a small living room where a large flat-screen TV was mounted on the wall. The TV was on, and even though the volume may not have been all that loud, the closeness of the proximity to the TV made it feel intrusively loud. A young couple, laying on the floor with their backs against the couch, were watching the television. Between them, a bundle of soft pink blankets held our most recent hospice admission. I introduced myself and asked if I might see the baby. The young couple, as it turned out, were the mother and father. I was handed the bundle, and as I cradled her in my arms, I looked around for somewhere to see her better. The living room opened to a kitchen area where two women sat at a table by a window. I introduced myself, and they waved me in towards them. They were mother and daughter, the grandmother and great-grandmother of the baby. We sat and talked quietly as I held this tiny, quiet life in my arms. The story was a sad one. The circumstances of the pregnancy, the fact that the mother and father had both apparently suffered some periods of time of substance abuse and that were not actually together any longer at the time of the birth. Substance use, to be clear, was not in any way responsible for what had happened. The father had come back into the mother's life in an effort to be supportive, but it wasn't really working. The two elders, the women I was with, were sure that he was still using, and they were concerned for everyone involved. I asked quietly if there was somewhere we could talk more openly, and they asked if I'd like to see the house. I returned the baby to her mother, thanking her for allowing me to hold her, and said I'd be back shortly, and if they wanted to talk, we could. I followed the two elders through a hallway into an art studio where the great-grandmother made the most amazing detailed leatherwork and beadwork. They were then able to speak more openly about what their concerns were. The child's grandmother lived far away and had traveled with her daughter and granddaughter to her own mother's home in the mountains to be present to and with what was coming. Four generations of women from this family were together for the first time ever. Considering what had brought that about, it's easy to understand that the relationships were complicated and that the emotions were all over the map. While we talked, we heard a door slam, and a few moments later, the young mom stepped into the studio and announced that the baby's father had left to go back to his home about an hour away. It felt like all three of them were relieved. This was not going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination. Having anyone underfoot who was unstable and unpredictable was going to make it even worse. Although when I hear myself say that, it's hard to imagine that anything could be any worse than what they were in the midst of. I visited with the three women around the baby girl child as she lay quietly in her basket. They spoke about the way the community was gathering around them, the way, through social media, folks were reaching out and showing up and building a web of support beneath this family. In the days they were together, in the days that this small child's heart continued to beat, she was shown so much love, given so much tenderness, and wrapped in so much warmth. The night I was called and asked to come was one I will remember forever. The town where they lived was 30 miles from my home, and the call had come as we were preparing for bed. The drive was easy and well lit by a full moon. I was grateful for the time alone in the car, gathering my thoughts and then breathing them away, knowing there was no place for them at the table I was about to sit down at. When I arrived at the home, there was an eerie quiet. The house was a little out of town, up on a hill, kind of like up on a mesa. There were other homes in that neighborhood, but the late hour had them mostly dark. I knocked softly on the door and then let myself in. The house was dimly lit and silent. The two older women were again at the kitchen table. A small pink bundle was on the table between them. I walked over and looked at the still, lifeless form of the beautiful, perfect girl child that had been so well loved for every one of her 31 days. The women gestured for me to sit. They said that it was just them. They couldn't find the baby's mom, that she'd been gone for days. The younger of the two women seemed more frantic about trying to find her daughter to give her a chance to say one last farewell to her baby. She was making phone call after phone call trying to track her down. The elder sat quietly, looking at the child and at me. There was little to be said. It had been just about a week since I first met them. There was no gnashing of teeth, no visible display of the sadness I know they both must have been holding. A sadness that in its complexity must have felt unimaginable, and one that their lives had already shown them they would survive. But this baby's young mother did not know those things yet, and the women who had held and cared for the pink bundle wanted her to know, before we called the funeral home, that death had come in its final and forever form, in case she needed one more moment with her child. We did not find her. We wondered aloud if she perhaps already knew. That sense that if our children are in trouble or die far from where we are, that somehow we know. This whole story just felt sad, and still feels sad. But there was a brief moment of exquisite beauty, and that is why I am even telling her story, which is not as accurate as saying that I am telling you my story of her. When we finally decided to call the funeral home to come, it was quite late. When Thomas arrived, he backed his van into their driveway and pulled the gurney from the back. We stood there for a moment, and I went back inside to ask the elders how they wanted to handle the transfer of her care. The great-grandmother stood and carried the pink bundle out to the waiting gurney. But instead of setting the girl child down, she walked out into the road. The moon was huge and had risen and was waiting straight above our heads. This old woman, an elder of great wisdom and great strength, lifted that small pink bundle up into the air and said, "Little one, I want you to meet Grandmother Moon." She held her there for a moment and then walked quietly back to the rear of the van and set her on the gurney. Thomas laid his hand on hers and said he would take tender care of their child. She didn't speak. She just turned and walked back into the house. I hope those listening can take a moment to close their eyes and imagine witnessing such love in the midst of so much pain. It was one of those things that will stay with me forever, and one of the experiences I've had in this work that I didn't want to take with me first without sharing it. Until next time, may your days be full of meaning. This is Sean Jung, and I hope you'll join me again where the veil grows thin.